This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Live and Learn. I'm Troy Antic. It's been called a demographic crisis, a silver time bomb, and a grey tsunami. But whichever name you prefer, Malaysia is expected to reach ageing population status by 2030, where 7% of the population will be above the age of 65. Here to walk us through some of the challenges we will face is Datuk Mahadev Shankar, a former Court of Appeals judge and an advisor to the Malaysian Healthy Ageing Society. Datuk Mahadev, welcome.
Well, thank you for having me.
So this issue of an ageing population has always been framed as a negative thing. Do you think that's misguided?
Well, to put things in perspective, we have to bear in mind that there's a beginning and there's an end, you know, to all things in life. And in this particular case, the criterion is infant mortality, you know, what is the rate of infant mortality, and the other is life expectancy. So if you have a low infant mortality rate and a high life expectancy in statistical terms, it is assumed that the health of the nation is very good, you know. But I think that that is a rather distorted perspective, because it is not the rate of infant mortality or the life expectancy, which is the true criteria. The proper way to approach is, what is the quality of life between those two points? So you might have someone who lives until 90, but has spent most of his life in bed. I mean, it's hardly, you know, thing. I think I've made my point. So whether it is a good thing or a bad thing, I think the approach that I will take is this. On my 80th birthday, I said that my whole life has been spent in searching for the meaning of life. And my nephew, who heard this, corrected me, and he said, "Uncle," he said, "it is life by itself has no meaning. It only acquires meaning when you put meaning into it." You know, so how you live your life is what makes the grade. You know, so is it a good thing or is it a bad thing? I would say that it would be a marvelous thing if all people who lived up to a ripe old age lived to their full potential. But on the other hand, it will be a terrible thing, you know, if they're, you know, halfway through the race, they became invalids or they suffered from chronic illnesses, or, you know, and today's, you know, the major problems today are loneliness, I would put at number one, stress, you know, diabetes, you know, these are chronic illnesses like this. They tend to rob life of its quality. So if you have it that way, it'd be a bad thing, you know. In fact, at one time, there were people who thought that smoking should actually be encouraged so that people don't live too long and they'll make way for the younger people. But I don't know, that's not the way I look at it. So I would say good thing if you live well, bad thing if you live badly. That's it. So you can't just simply put a label, is he a good man or a bad man? You know, it's oversimplification, which doesn't answer the question. Life is a complex business and you have to look at it holistically.
The majority of us live through our life through this three-stage cycle, isn't it, of education, work and retirement.
Yes.
What about this concept of retirement? Do you think that is outmoded?
Well, the Tennyson, the poet, you know, he said that the old order changeth, yielding place to new. And social circumstances differ, you know, as we go along. One of the critical things here was that the retirement age, a compulsory retirement age, was first introduced in the public service. You know, they said that all government servants should retire at the age of 55 at my father's time. And the private sector followed suit. You know, they also put in a similar thing, but less rigid. You know, the public sector was less rigid. I think that, again, this one size fits all, you know, at a particular point in time, you bring down the guillotine, is not the correct approach. You have to look at it on a case-to-case basis. What sort of industry are you looking at? What sort of work is being done? I mean, let me give you a simple example. If you have a financial expert who becomes the head of a bank and he's essential to, you know, the proper functioning of the bank and he reaches the age of, let's say, 60, are we to say, hey, go out and you're retired as from right now you're retired, as opposed to somebody who is engaged in very heavy manual labor, let's say. And by the time he reaches 55, I think he might be worn out. And if we did not make provision for him to take leave of these hard physical labors, it'll be an injustice to the worker. So we have to look at it, you know, well, what is required of the job? Is it a repetitive sort of thing? Or does it require a growing amount of wisdom on how best to tackle it? So you cannot take such a, you know, rigid approach to these problems. You're dealing with life, you're dealing with people, and you cannot just say one rule fits all, you know, and get all of them slotted into one category or another. So at the age of 65, your brain stops functioning, so get out and make way for somebody else. So there are economic factors also, you know, involved in this. And you've got to make way for the younger people to fill in the positions that have been occupied. And things have got to go on that way. But here again, I am not in favor of a compulsory retirement age for everybody. I think that we are to take a more pragmatic approach to this problem and treat each person on his merits. If he is contributing, if he is alive, if he is active, you know, and he is contributing to society, we should allow him to continue. If, on the other hand, you know, he is not contributing, or if he is become redundant to the job and he should be sent out to do something else, that's the way I look at it.
Yeah, because even how our country define an older person is the age of 60, isn't it?
Yeah.
So immediately you are already writing off a large segment of a population as a problem to be solved. Should the definition be more fluid?
It would not be correct to treat the issue of retirement as an age problem. You know, as an age problem. So just because a person has reached the age of 60, he is deemed to be, you know, useless to the organization in which he is employed. I don't think that that is the right approach. But at the same time, you can't just throw aside this rule as to retirement. That rule has been formulated to answer other problems. You know, there may be socio-economic problems. There may be questions about housing, you know, depending on whether he's living in government quarters or whatever it is. And if you take a holistic view of this thing, I think that there may well have been an actuary at work. You know, that age has been decided on actuarial criteria. And the actuarial criteria is something that is very, very much driven by the economics of the situation. So this person who has reached the age of 60, assuming that he has set aside, you know, provision for his old age, you know, he wants to go and do his own thing, and he's not going to be a burden to society. He can take a cruise and go around the world if he wants, or set up on his own. This is a facility that should be afforded to him. But the difficulty arises when you have to deal with a whole group of people, you know, and you can't then say, all right, you tell them when you reach 60, you got to prepare yourself, you know, to vacate and go and do something else. Yeah, so it is perceived to be the right balance. I think the people who are in authority, you know, they look at it and they say, yeah, the right balance is 60. You know, and this is what we should do. But circumstances are changing. And in some countries in the world, they cannot afford to retire people at 60 because they do not have enough money to pay their pensions. You know, so they keep them on for 5 or 10 years more in order to evade you know, I'm using the word advice to evade the problem of paying him the full pension that he would otherwise have got. So, well, there you go. I think that this is the way to look at it, yeah.
I'm speaking today to Dr. Mahadev Shankar about what we can do as a nation to cope with a rapidly aging population. We'll talk more after this short break. You're listening to BFM 89.9. You're listening to Live and Learn. I'm Troy Antic. My guest today is Dr. Mahadev Shankar, a former Court of Appeals judge and an advisor to the Malaysian Healthy Aging Society. He will be speaking at the ASEAN Conference on Healthy Aging next week, of which we'll have more information on that later in the show. But turning our attention back to this looming demographic change, you know, we are not the first nation to face this issue. And I think you have alluded to some of the possible remedies that we can use to address this change in the population. What are the lessons globally that we can model after?
Each nation has got its own idiosyncrasies and characteristics in this problem. The profile is not uniform, you know, throughout the world. So if you take the American situation and compare it with ours, it's a totally different ball game. But I think, speaking generally, the first lesson that we have to absorb, you know, watching the global picture, is that the responsibility for good health is primarily that of the person. But the attitude now seems to be that government must take the responsibility for the health of the population. I don't agree at all. I think that, you know, what is the word? Khalil Gibran, the poet, you know, he said once, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country. So if people, you know, take the proper precautions, a good diet, you know, and the way they live, what they eat, exercise, you know, predominantly subject to everything else being equal, exercise. These are the key components of a person having good health. Now, if he lives a dissolute life, and then he falls critically ill by the time he's 55 or 60, and then he goes and expects the government to put aside everything and look after him, I think there's a distortion in perspective here. And this is the first lesson that has to be driven home, you know, that health is the responsibility of the individual. If some calamity or, you know, some untoward thing happened, which in no way he is to blame, then, of course, he's entitled to look sideways or upwards for support. So that is my first point. Now, my second point is that from an economic point of view, we have got into a situation where the governments themselves have interfered, you know, with the process of nature. Well, example, you take the Chinese rule, you know, one child policy. No, at the time when that policy was formulated, my perception is that it was formulated for economic reasons. They didn't want a large population which their resources would not support. But look at their position now. You know, they're all encouraging people to produce more babies. I mean, for that matter, even Singapore at one time had a zero population growth. And then China was very brutal, you know, in the way they went about forcing the people to abort their second baby. I don't think that example was followed anywhere else in the world. Maybe in Chile, you know, there were also enforced abortions there. We have not, thank God, gone to that extent. But that second lesson is forward planning. Forward planning in the sense that when people get to a certain age, you got to ensure that they have got the financial resources to look after themselves. But this move away from an agrarian, you know, society to an urban society has brought with it a whole load of problems. And even women today, you know, they want to be free, they want to be independent, they want to have the to do the job they want to. And they don't want babies. You know, this is a significant feature today. Women do not want to have babies until they are in their 30s or 40s, and you get a problem. When you get to that situation, the whole picture has changed. So what is the priority here? You know, do you want an indefinite, unlimited expansion of population? Or do you want a population which is consonant with your economic resources? You know, so there's a juggling act, you know, that is involved here. And we have to adopt policies, I think, which are geared to the well-being of all rather than one segment of the community. So those are the main lessons, I think, you know, that we have to absorb. How do you structure the population to the resources that are available? And we can't have indefinite growth. That has already been proven.
Going back to your first point on taking personal responsibility, Dr. Mahathir, when did you start making a conscious decision to look after your health?
I was not a healthy baby. At the age of 2 or 3, I was in the general hospital here in KL with pneumonia, and I was there for about 3 or 4 months in that ward. And when the Japanese occupation came, I had to walk 14 miles a day to the factory where I was working. Curiously, during that time, even though food was scarce, I never fell ill. And this is an interesting situation. I was getting plenty of exercise, and when I got to the factory, the first thing I had to do was Rajo Taiso, you know, the Japanese exercise which all of us had to do. And not enough food, plenty of exercise, and we still survive. Okay. But since then, are you asking me about my own situation? I had problems until 1970, respiratory problems, maybe because of boxing, you know, because I was a boxer in school, and I had to operate my septum, deviated septum, other things like that. Smoking, yes, that too. I stopped smoking in 1968 completely, largely due to the good influence of my daughter. But my other problems, we had the turnaround in February of 1973 when I took up Tai Chi. My Tai Chi teacher was Lillian Low, and it made a critical and very significant difference to my state of health. And the teacher told me that circulation of your blood, circulation, is the key to good health. Tai Chi ensures that. In fact, in my view, I think it's the best exercise in the world, even superior to yoga as far as I'm concerned. But that is a debatable moot point. But people who do exercise, they achieve movement within the system. You know, this is critical to good health. Circulation is right at the top of that. So I continued, you know, my Tai Chi as far as I can. But at my age now, my knees are giving way and I can't do some of the movements. But I still do the others which I can. And hopefully, you know, I'll have a few more years left, you know, to see the world through.
Did you have an idea of how long you wanted to live when you were younger?
No, I didn't give it a thought. I thought that I would be immortal. The idea of growing old one day and passing on just didn't occur to me. The reality dawns on you after you cross 70 or 80. And now I'm wondering, you know, when the call will come. So as Tan Sri Ani Arup said, we are all sitting in the departure lounge. And when our number is called, our flight is called, we just have to go with good grace.
You will be speaking at the conference next week about legislation and the elder person. Is the law kind to older people in Malaysia?
I don't agree that the law, making new laws, is an answer to every problem. I think that, you know, non-stop legislation is in fact a disease. You know, it's an admission of failure rather than success. The thing we have to do is to change the culture, is to change the perception of the individual. And if we did that, I think we will get ahead of the problem well before the thing. So what can we do with the law? There are certain areas where the law is necessary, you know, reporting communicable diseases, for example, you know, providing the resources for dealing with things on a community basis, you know, providing clinics. And this way, let us not overlook the fact that our health, the health care in Malaysia is about the top, one of the top countries in the world. But provision of health care is in two sectors. One of them is dealing with consequences, you know, treating people who are already ill. That is only half the picture. The other half, which is the more important half, is how do you prevent people from getting ill? And in this area, I would focus on, this is not just the job of the Ministry of Health, you know. All the government ministries have got a responsibility here, providing good housing, you know, environment, making sure that we are not living in a polluted environment. Food, you know, the promotion of junk food and allowing people to eat things like that and get obese. You know, I know, I think that's a considerable problem these days. Children are getting, men are getting obese. And then, you know, there's the problem of loneliness. If you want to see what Malaysia, Satu Malaysia, go to any public hospital. You'll find Malaysians of all ethnicities sitting there and they get on like a house on fire because they have got a common problem. They are united in the face of a common foe. That common foe is disease and aging and, you know, other problems like that. They all compare notes. Say, what did you do wrong? What did you do right? So here's I think we have enough laws in this country on the issue of our hospital. The Ministry of Health has got enough laws there, you know. And to make even more laws is, I think, if there were practices within the community which are anti-health, smoking, for example, we all well established, you know, that is bad for you. I think if some laws were passed to, you know, to restrict or, you know, abolish that, I would support it. But then the revenue that we get, you know, from the tobacco industry is so significant that the authorities don't seem to be in a terrible hurry to ban smoking. But it has been done in Singapore. I'm not sure when it will be done here. So there you go. I mean, in sum, I would say that I would be very slow to pass new laws. I would rather address the problem by looking at what it is and to see whether we can change social behavior to achieve the result that we want.
Would you have a final message on healthy aging?
My final message is that the Healthy Aging Society, let's say on whose behalf I'm here, we are trying to re-educate the public on what healthy aging means. You know, healthy aging, there are two words there. The word health there is variable, you know. The word age there is an inevitable, you know, you're going to grow old, whether you like it or not. But how you grow old, that is the key, you know, to the entire exercise. And this conference that we are having, you know, in Kuching is geared and designed to bring awareness to the participants as individuals, awareness to the various ministries and the government itself on how they can produce a creative intervention in improving the health of the people. And the bottom line, I think, to everyone concerned is that health is the responsibility of the individual. If support is to be obtained from others, it will be when there is a perception that some problem has arisen which requires intervention on the part of the authorities. That's it. That's my message to all of you.
Thank you very much for speaking to me today.
Okay.
The ASEAN Conference on Healthy Aging 2017 will take place next week from the 10th to 12th October at the Pullman Hotel in Kuching. For more information, visit www.acha2017.com. ACHA stands for ASEAN Conference on Healthy Aging. You've been listening to Live and Learn, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.